Thanks, Shirley. I love that tree. The tulip tree is amazing. Our next reader is the person who put all this together, and her family has a long history on Salt Spring Island. Some of you may remember a recent exhibit here, which featured 6 generations of her family's art. A pretty remarkable exhibit to see and witness, and documented in this chapbook, Details of the Passage, Poems from an Island. I have a feeling this is going to be a very rare book, and there are some copies for sale. It's a delight to know this person, a Subud sister, a member of my spiritual community, Subud, and delighted to be part of this reading and to present her to you now. Please welcome Adelia McWilliam.
Thank you, Paul. And one of my goals is to learn how to be as good at introducing people as Paul is. He's always does such a lovely job. And I also want to acknowledge Sophia. I meant to acknowledge you, Sophia, wonderful librarian who's helped and supported this event as well. And I had you on my list and forgot, so thank you very much for being part of this and being a huge support to this group. I want to start with a poem that is about flying over Salt Spring Island. And it's a little bit of a flight of fancy, and I hope that if anyone here is familiar with First Nations mythology, that they will forgive me with what I've just done with a bit of it. But here goes. So the poem is called, "And the Plane Banked Right Over Salt Spring Island. And below us now, Long Harbor with Wilson's Bowl, sky's mirror at high tide, soul's emptiness at low, witness to at least one apocalyptic full moon swim. For grinding, they say, but they don't really know. It's unseeing eye, the diameter of a dinner plate, scooped out of Long Harbor's granite shore, stares up at the luminous banks of the wandering Star River, and will continue to stare, silt-filled as the oceans rise. Spring's choir of Pacific chorus frogs are singing operettas all day and all night and into the day right now. Frog, amphibian wizard, neither and both at the same time. The story goes that you can journey across the membrane between human and spirit without a passport or a death certificate. Frog with your glistening froggy body, pulsing throat, bulging eyes that rest like binoculars just above the surface of the pond. Is Wilson's Bowl one of your eyes after you fled from the light that Raven brought and were turned into stone? If so, where is the other one? There's a war on between the ancestors, the first ones and the white-skinned ones who came much later. Can you, shape-changer, neither and both at the same time, be a third side to this war, your stone bowl eyes embedded in the earth, watching? Genoa Bay and Cowichan Bay below the plain now, farms, hedgerows, and fences, zigzag up highway, 3 freighters anchored at angles near Sampson Narrows as we bank again toward the airport. I want to stay up here amidst boiling cumulus clouds on a blue-skied April evening, amidst spirit warriors on the backs of fish with wings. But the plane, after flying so low, I think we might touch the mountain ridges, floats onto the runway, buffeted by wind, and skids to a halt with a roar of brakes as fences, fence lines, and boundaries streak to intersect time's exhausted cranium. Why do we act as though we hate this place?" So this next poem is about a friend of mine who is not long for the world, and it's been an amazing journey for me. So I think I'll read the poem and here goes. So this poem is called The Wolf. And it's the epigraph is from Brenda Hillman. And this is, I'm part of, Paul teaches these amazing online classes. And one of his suggestions, a sort of a prompt from a poem, is to base a poem on a line from a Brenda Hillman poem about muses, and the guest muse, I think, was called in and gave some different advice. So the guest muse said, she never told them not to write the wildest thing in the dark. So here goes, writing about the wildest thing in the dark. I drive home from a visit with a dying friend. A cluster of greenhouses glow in the evening dark. Amidst the February stubble of vineyards, cocoons waiting to hatch and fly off on luminous wings. My real life is a wolf I am stalking, skinny, long-legged, elusive. Sometimes I find it scat on the trail containing raccoon claws and tiny teeth. My friend is so thin now. Feel my arm, she says, opening her shirt. Just feel. Her upper arm fits inside the curve of my fingers, but her skin, taut across the bone, is warm. Once I caught the reflection of a loping wolf in the window of a moving train, a blurred dream of fur at the edge of the track. What is it to be wild? Riffing into the dawn, your voice a sou'easter moving across the water, your unseeable future glistening like abalone as it moves through worlds that spin and wobble. Talia tells me the bedroom she's moving downstairs to will be beautiful. The hospital bed placed just so. Green curtains on the window that faces a cherry tree newly in bloom. Her real life is a deer, gingerly lifting thin legs as it enters a mist. No looking back. This very moment, my lyric wolf is padding ahead of me on the trail, head down, caring nothing for my ego. I trot along behind, out of breath, outside its peripheral vision. Have you ever seen a wolf laugh? The wind blows through its mouth, ha, 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 and dry leaves tumble. Now I've outlined the shape of a loping wolf on the path with lime, so I can freeze frame my life and enter no time being, where Talia and I are pitching our tents. In the long grass on a bluff on Beaver Point, overlooking the Salish Sea, and in the morning we'll go for coffee in Fulford Harbor and write in our journals, sunshine, streaming through the window. So I just want to finish with a kind of a haiku, but I don't know that it follows haiku rules. It's a haiku based on a place where I spend a lot of time, up in Desolation Sound. And it goes something like this. After the thunderstorm, children's voices skipping across the bay, I make coffee. Thank you. Oh.